Today is Monday, March 11, 2024. This is a quick start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros. President Biden's bizarre red line warning to Israel. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating if you haven't already. We'd greatly appreciate that. And you can email us your thoughts, quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. We do enjoy hearing from you, so feel free to send us a note. All right. Joining me now to get through the news of the cray, as we like to call it here on the Quick Start Podcast, Billy Hallowell. Billy, a lot to get through today. You've got a disturbing religious freedom case happening in Canada right now.
Yeah. There have been a couple of proposed bills that would amend the criminal code there, and a lot of fears over what could happen with religious liberty. So we'll break that all down.
All right. Looking forward to that. Details there. And a Catholic couple has been denied foster care because they're not, quote unquote, affirming of LGBTQ views. Madison Seals has more on why this particular court battle should matter to all people of faiths. And don't forget to subscribe to all of our CBN News podcasts, DC Debrief with John Stolness, that weekly episode on Fridays, wrapping up what's going on in DC for the week, does a great job there. And Billy's Newsmakers podcast, a full-length interview each and every weekday. Don't forget and miss subscribing to those. You can do so in the description to this podcast episode. All right, all the housekeeping's out of the way. Let's head on over to the news here in 90 seconds. Militants armed with AK-47s attacked a school in Nigeria, kidnapping at least 287 students. This is a second large-scale abduction in Nigeria within a week. This is amid a deepening crisis in the region. This happened in the early hours late last week on Thursday. They encircled these assailants, a government school, and started seizing students as the day began. Initially, authorities reported 100 students kidnapped, but a later head count by the head teacher revealed 287 kids were missing. The governor there visited the site and pledged efforts to ensure the students' safe return. He said he's received strong assurances from the president and the national security advisor that no stone will be left unturned to bring back the children. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he'd push ahead with the military offensive in Rafah. Meanwhile, Joe Biden warned that doing so would be crossing a red line. Many were left scratching their heads after the president's MSNBC interview because he also said he would never leave Israel. Here's the quote. He said, "The defense of Israel is still critical, so there's no red line where I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. But there's red lines that if he crosses them," and he said that without finishing his chain of thought. And the Oscars took place last night. Oppenheimer won big with 7 awards. Those are just some of today's top headlines. You can check out those stories and more over at cbnnews.com. Billy, I gleefully didn't even know the Oscars were happening this weekend, and I'm sorry to be snobbish on this front, but I just, over time, I used to watch it when I was younger, but I'm nearly 50 years old now, and I don't know what it is, but I have zero interest in the Oscars, and maybe I'm alone on this. Maybe I'm just becoming the old Muppets guys up in the balcony who just curmudgeon-y kind of joke and yell at everything. But I don't know. I didn't watch any of it. Did you?
No, I saw about 5 minutes of the open of it. I have zero interest and barely even operate the TV in my house. So whoever's watching, whatever is how I catch things. And So we didn't really watch it here. My wife watched a lot of the clips. You know, she was interested in a couple of the films to see what happened, but I don't know. For me, I feel like, oh great. You know, we're going to pat ourselves on the back all night. Yeah. And I think it's nice to award people for hard work. And there's some really, you know, beautiful projects out there. And then, you know, but the problem for me is I just don't want to sit there listening to people give political opinions and all that. Well, I don't know how much of that went on last night.
That's what I did see. Just browsing the headlines of it. I did see that there were, of course, some jabs at Katie Britt, who also got the Saturday Night Live treatment. Scarlett Johansson impersonated her and they mocked her. And look, you can just buckle up and get used to this, because with Trump essentially being the de facto nominee here for the Republican Party, you're going to see this thing really shift into partisan mode. And when I say this thing, I mean culture. You have Hollywood and music and all of these artists that are generally left-leaning. They're going to go all in here. And so you can expect to see a lot of criticisms over the next few months. Jimmy Kimmel was the host last night, by the way, and he did read one of former President Trump's posts on his social network, Truth Social. And so he read through it, and of course Trump is just ripping Jimmy Kimmel, calling him the worst host at the Oscars, saying his open was, quote, that of a less than average person trying too hard to be something which he's not, never can be. Anyway, he goes on and criticizes, and then Kimmel responded saying, isn't it past your jail time? So this is the nonsense we can sort of expect here for the next few months up until this election. So buckle up, everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I did see that open and I heard that quote and I thought,
here we go.
It's bad enough to not be that funny, but then to just, I don't know. It's like, I don't find Jimmy Kimmel that funny personally, but sorry if that's offensive to anybody, but I think, you know, why can't we just enjoy things for what they are? Why does everything have to be politicized and ruined? Right. Well, it infects so much.
It does. And look, I mean, it's just the way whichever side of the aisle you're on, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, it's going to be one-sided. And that's just what's going to frustrate one side. And the other side is going to be like, yay, this is hilarious. And the other side's going to be just annoyed. And it's just the way it is with our culture right now, being Hollywood being dominated by Democrats. It's just what you can expect. That's all we're saying here. So buckle up. So buckle up or just don't watch like I do, and then you won't see most of it. So you can always go that route. But let's move on to more important things here and the focus story. We've got critics are warning here on this new bill that could really restrict religious freedom in Canada. So let's dive into this one.
Yeah, this is a really, really complicated story. All right. So you have a number of people who are warning about this. And just like anything, you have people issuing warnings and then you have the other side saying, what are you worried about? There's nothing to see here. But basically, you have a situation in which, and actually, I had a chance to talk with Jeff King. He's the president of International Christian Concern. That's a religious persecution watchdog. We've had him on many times. He was sounding the alarm on this proposed bill, C-367. And what that bill would do in Canada is to amend the criminal code and to take away some religious exemptions that have protected Christians and other people of faith. He compared this proposed bill to the Equality Act, right? That was U.S. legislation that the Biden administration was pushing. It failed to pass, but the U.S. bill essentially sought to prohibit discrimination based on sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity. And that would have affected areas like public accommodations, education, federal funding, housing credit, the jury system, the list goes on. But there are a lot of concerns in America over the Equality Act, because how was it going to affect businesses who were run by Christians, right? Like bakeries and photographers and all the cases we've talked about in the U.S. where there might be issues with same-sex marriage or providing services for things that people felt violated their religious conscience. So, you know, that's sort of a framework for how we could see this bill C-367. King said it would create in Canada potential problems for people making biblical claims or basing objections to certain issues on even the Quran, if you're a Muslim, or on other religious sentiments. And he talked about these dangers creating a very restrictive dynamic. And this is interesting because, again, it would take away essentially the protections that have been there. So when you have hate crimes laws, for instance, you know, there are currently in Canadian law protections for people who are basing those positions, their positions on, you know, a Christian or, again, it could be an Islamic religious text. And so a lot to unpack there, but that's essentially what is happening with this particular bill that would remove those things.
Yeah, I mean, definitely very concerning. And again, it makes you glad here in America that our Constitution is written the way it is, even though it's constantly under assault these days, and they're pushing the bounds of that in many ways, as a lot of these Christian organizations, these legal organizations here in America are, you can attest to all the things that we've seen and we've covered here. They're definitely pushing the bounds on that. Canada's Constitution, while you said they have some protections, definitely not as sturdy on the free speech side of things as as we would be accustomed to in here in America. But what is Jeff King, who is the president of ICC, what does he warn about the trajectory of the bill?
Yeah, I mean, he talked about how this is what you see in other very restrictive, you know, despotic nations where they're cracking down on Christianity, that this is the sort of thing you see happen when the law changes. And I want to give a specific, because this is a very confusing story, and so I'm trying to explain it in a way that helps people. But I think one of the best ways we can do this is to actually look at the criminal code in Canada. There are a couple of paragraphs of that criminal code that have a section about the willful promotion of hatred. Okay, so the amendment would repeal a couple of these paragraphs. Currently, here's what the law reads. It says, everyone who by communicating statements other than in private conversation willfully promotes hatred against any identifiable group is guilty of an indictable offense and is liable to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 2 years or an offense punishable on summary conviction. Now, currently there are religious protections. That's what we're talking about, tied to this provision, right? So even though it's saying if you willfully promote hatred against a group, right, that these things will happen to you, there it also currently says, if in good faith the person expressed or attempted to establish by an argument an opinion on a religious subject or an opinion based on a belief in a religious text, meaning that, you know, if you have a religious belief, you're going to be exempt from what this just said, which is that you can go to prison, you could be punished. They want to remove the part that I just read about the religious subject or the religious text, which that is the fear here, that this is going to open the door to very horrible things in Canada and really restrict religious liberty.
Yeah, taking that part out would definitely weaken it, I mean, big time. But even with it in there, the way it's worded and saying in good faith, so it seems like it leaves some vagueness and some opportunity for them to just argue a potential case saying, well, it wasn't in good faith. And then you can potentially get around it that way. So the first bill seemed to stall here. Where do things stand now?
Yeah. So, and it's interesting because everybody's talking about that C-367 bill. But from what I can tell, when you go back and you dig, that was in November, that bill seemed to stall. And in February last month, Bill C-373 was introduced, and it's the same exact bill. So they have reintroduced this and they are pushing this, you know, again, different numbers, same bill, same identical summary, targeting the same repeal objectives. That was reintroduced February 5th. And so, I mean, they're trying to push this. There is a chance it could happen. And we saw a lot happen in Canada during COVID. So we're keeping an eye on this one because it's not getting a lot of attention, shockingly.
Yeah. And why do you I mean, we are covering this. It's in Canada, as we were talking about. Why do you think it matters, especially to people here listening in America?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we know what's happening in Finland. We've covered that with Päivi Räsänen. Yeah. We've covered all of these cases that have happened in the West. This is right on our border in a country very similar to our own. And so if this stuff is happening there, it can very easily come here. Again, the Equality Act was something that opened up similar concerns. And I think people need to realize those bent on restricting religious liberty or at least subjugating it to other rights, they're not going to stop until they're able to do that. And so it's deeply, deeply concerning.
Yeah, it's deeply concerning story indeed. Appreciate you putting that one on our radar today, Billy. Of course, we'll be keeping you all posted on updates on this one and others like it as we go forward. All right, we're going to head over to the main thing now. And in the midst of a foster care crisis, the state of Massachusetts has denied a Catholic couple's application to foster and adopt children because their faith is not affirming of LGBTQ views. Beckett attorney Will Hahn talked to Madison Seals about the legal battle that ensued and why the case should matter to people of all faiths. That's today's main thing.
Well, let's just start with a little more backstory on the Burks family at the center of this case. Why did they decide to foster in the first place?
Yeah, Mike and Kitty Burke are a loving couple. They wanted to welcome children into their family. They had experienced the heartbreak of infertility, and after that, they decided to become foster parents with the hope of caring for or eventually adopting children in need of a stable, loving home. So they had applied to become foster parents through Massachusetts's Department of Children and Families. And In that process, they went through 30 hours of training, some very lengthy interviews, assessments of their home, their health, their family life. And in the course of that, DCF acknowledged their many strengths, including their willingness to parent a child with significant or moderately significant medical or mental health and behavioral needs. And one of the interviewers even praised how they really seemed to understand adoption and foster care. But unfortunately, DCF ended up denying the Berks a foster care license, and as a result, denied them their last opportunity to become foster parents. And there was only one reason given for that, and it was very clearly given, which is that they would not be affirming to a child who identified as LGBTQIA. That's a direct quote. They made it very clear in the reports. DCF said that Kitty and Mike, they're devoutly Roman Catholic, and they not only attend church with regular frequency, they work for their local church as musicians, but as the reviewer put it, their faith is not affirming, and neither are they. Mm. And because of that, the Berks are not allowed to be foster parents in Massachusetts, but not just them, anyone who holds beliefs similar to theirs. And this is particularly sad when you consider that Massachusetts is in the middle of a foster care crisis. There's a shortage of homes. They have children who have been in hospitals and in office buildings, not because they need to be there, but because Massachusetts has nowhere else to put them. And yet, apparently, that situation is preferable to sending them to a loving Catholic family.
Right. You know, besides the faith aspect of this couple, which I do want to get into because that's really the key part of this case, you mentioned so many of the ways that Mike and Kitty Burke are so qualified to take care of children, besides the fact that they just want to raise children who are not their own as their own and make a loving home for them. I also want to mention the fact that Kitty is a former paraprofessional for special needs kids. So that's an advantage for the Burks that should be considered. But as we're discussing, this is about their faith. The whole reason that they were rejected was based on their faith. You mentioned some of the steps of the foster application process, but can you talk a little bit more about how in-depth that process is and where in the process did the Burks find out that they were rejected?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to point out that, you know, that letter came at the end of a very intense period of review. It's a very extensive process, as you might imagine, to become a foster parent. And there's a lot of individualized analysis of that where your entire home life, and really your entire life, is put up for scrutiny by the foster care agency. And most of the conversation when the reviewer went to the Burke's house, and this is said in the report, is focused on these issues. And in fact, the reviewer said that she felt compelled to challenge the Burks' faith. And it was really most of the discussion kind of centered on these issues. After they got the denial, I mean, they were really taken aback. I mean, it was quite a shock to the system. They had spent so much time, and not only so much time, but they had received a lot of encouragement along the way. The person they had been working with, kind of getting communication with through DCF, was saying, you know, you're one step closer. You know, I already had mentioned that DCF acknowledged many of their strengths as a couple and as a family and their ability to have a variety of foster children in their home. And even the reviewer who reviewed them and made a lot of these adverse statements, even she recommended that DCF approve the Burks just with conditions. We're not really sure what those might be, but it speaks to the amount of flexibility that DCF has to pair a good fit for foster parents and children, which makes sense. When you're assembling a family, you want a good fit. But despite all that flexibility, all that discretion, DCF just said, nope, at the front end, we won't even work with you. And that was a real shock to the system, to the Burks.
The point when the Burks received this letter, they had made it all the way through this extensive application process that you've detailed for us. So I imagine there wasn't only a sadness at the feeling of rejection, but also a frustration and anger. But how did the Burks respond to that letter?
Yeah, well, when they received the letter, they immediately wanted to appeal the ruling. And DCF has a process that allows you to do that. And in the course of that process, the Burks were able to get access to the file that DCF had. Going through the home study that I mentioned, as well as just everything that they submitted as a part of trying to get licensed as foster parents. And not only everything that they submitted is there, but also this entire chain of internal DCF communications among people who were involved in screening the Burks, and then ultimately what's called the license review team that made the decision to deny them. They saw all of their communications, and so they saw all of these openly discriminatory statements that about their faith not being supportive, that it's that issues that there was a concern around the fact that they were involved in the Catholic Church, the way that the reviewer said that she needed to challenge them about their faith, and that simply because of their beliefs, which is another quote, because of their beliefs, they would not be able to foster children. I mean, at no point in this file did anyone at any time say anything like, you know, maybe we shouldn't just single them out for their religious beliefs, or maybe this is inappropriate, or maybe we should say this differently, or maybe we should ask other questions. At no point was anything like that said. From first to last, it was because you have these religious beliefs, because you agree with your church, we don't want to put children with you.
And Will, your work with Beckett, for those who don't know, involves defending religious liberty and freedom of expression for all faiths. So how That's likely, right. in light of those other cases that are similar, do you think that the Burks will prevail in this case? And when is a decision expected?
I do think the Burks are going to prevail in this case. And you're right to point out that this affects people of many faith traditions. It is, you know, obviously it affects Catholics, but it also would affect Orthodox Jews, Muslims. In fact, two of the cases where, because this issue with foster parents is unfortunately happening across the country, there is a Seventh-day Adventist family in Washington State that was prohibited from taking into their home even their own great-granddaughter as a small child, simply because of the hypothetical possibility that a decade or so later, they might have the quote-unquote wrong views about life-altering gender surgeries. There was another case in New Jersey involving a Christian family who shared their views with a foster child in their home. And as a result of sharing their views about marriage and family, that child was taken out of their home. So this is unfortunately happening across the country and affecting all manner of faith traditions. But thankfully, the Supreme Court has been very clear that you cannot say because of your religion, you don't get to participate in public life. Over and over and over again, especially in recent years, the court has been crystal clear about that. And because the court's been crystal clear about that, I think this case is going to go forward. We actually had a hearing in the case. Massachusetts sought to dismiss some of the individual members of the license review team that denied the Burks their license from the case on personal liability grounds, meaning that they could be held personally responsible for their discriminatory conduct. And the judge in the case, you know, very clearly understood and said to Massachusetts's counsel, you know, it's well known that there are just some areas where you just don't go there. You don't treat religion as a bar to participating in public life. If you subbed out in the phrase where DCF says their faith is not supportive and neither are they, just change that to another protected category. Their race is not supportive and neither are they. Their gender is not supportive and neither are they. Immediately you see the problem. The same is true for the First Amendment. And that's why I'm confident the Burks are going to prevail in this case, which will protect people of all faiths nationwide.
Well, we are standing confident with you. And Will Hahn, thank you so much for your time today and discussing this case, and also for your work with Beckett as well.
Thank you.
All right, Madison, thanks for that. Wow, that's some really shocking stuff there when you hear the quotes from these foster care agencies responding to a Catholic couple, and those quotes were just chilling, to be honest with you, to hear that, because this is something we all suspect, given the way the national conversation is going about faith and not having the right views on gender transitions. That is stuff like that, man, that is really shocking stuff, and I'm glad we have these places that are tackling these cases and taking them to court. And like we were just saying from the Canada case, our courts are holding up for now, and that's really a good thing. But all right, well, we have time for one last thing here on the podcast today. Philippians 2, 9 through 11. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and on under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. And it's just a reminder to me, Billy, that amid all of these types of cases where you have faith under attack and things of that nature, that, man, every knee is going to bow one day, and there's, you know, they're fighting a battle they can't win.
Yeah. I mean, every knee bowing is such an image, right? And it's also a reminder that we need to be reaching people, desperately reaching people who need to hear the truth, because every knee is going to bow, and you want people to be bowing with the right heart and mind and connected to the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. That is where we are going to leave it for the Quick Start podcast today. As always, get yourself on over to cbnnews.com and faithwire.com for more news from a Christian perspective. If you'd like, email us, like I said, quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. Lord willing, and that creek don't rise, we shall return tomorrow with more. God bless. We'll see you then.